Good morning. This is Carol Perhatch, and I'm reading the first part of the pantograph for Friday, August 18th, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on page 1A. From Bloomington. With six additions being built simultaneously in all directions outside Westminster Village to be followed by interior renovations, the $33 million Westminster building project has been a challenge to stage. "This is one of the more complex projects I've worked on," said Scott Fair, project manager with P.J. Hoare, the construction manager. "We are expanding in all directions," Fair said, following a hard hat tour of the building project with Westminster's CEO, Barb Nathan, this week. About 45 tradespeople were busy hammering, drilling, framing, sheeting, waterproofing, installing, and soldering throughout the additions. "We are building six additions to a place where 340 people live and 200 people work," Nathan said of the Continuing Care Retirement Community at 2025 East Lincoln Street, Bloomington. "We watch out for each other." The retirement community, which has a waiting list of more than 340 people, is in the middle of the first phase of the planned expansion and renovation. Following phases 2 and 3, the work could total $70 million. "We could not be happier with how it's going," Nathan said of the progress on phase 1, for which ground was broken in April. "We are on schedule and on budget. It's a big undertaking, and the project has gone the way we have envisioned it," Ferris said. "The residents are all amazed at the speed and the changes we see daily," said Carolyn Johnston, president of the Westminster Residents Council. "There have been frustrations, including temporary closings of a walkway between the social center and the apartments, requiring residents to use a basement hallway," Johnston said. "Some multi-purpose rooms are temporarily closed." We are going to now move to page A2 for the rest of the article. "There have been a couple of brief utility outages also," Johnston said, "but residents have enjoyed the entertainment of watching the construction. We are looking forward to using these new facilities," Johnston said. "Additions include expanding a multi-purpose room used for exercise classes, educational sessions, vespers, and movies by about 50%. Another addition will expand the dining room. A third addition is for activity space, art studio, salon, medical clinic, and human resources. Another large addition is for a new, larger entrance building facing Mercer Avenue, in addition to a larger entrance drive from Mercer and larger parking lot. Another part is a two-story addition to Martin Health Center, Westminster's skilled care building, which will add 24 private residence rooms to each floor. All the additions will be done by Christmas, with the exception of the Martin Health Center addition, which will be complete in the summer of 2018, Fair said. Then renovation of the existing Martin Health Center and Westminster Common areas will begin. Martin Health Center will expand its capacity to 96 beds, 80 private rooms, and 8 semi-private rooms. Common area renovations will include the Wellness Center, library, dining room, and kitchen. Phase 1 will be totally done in 2019, Nathan said. When Phase 1 is complete, Westminster, which has 215 employees, will add 20 employees and 18 licensed beds. Westminster, which opened in 1979, includes 176 independent living apartments, 22 independent living townhouses, 52 assisted living apartments, and 78 skilled care nursing home beds at the Martin Health Center. While 8% of the $33 million is coming from Westminster's reserves, most of the cost is being financed. In 2019, work will begin on Phase 2, which will be constructing an assisted living building with 60 assisted living units and 12 memory care units. Phase 3 will be renovating the existing assisted living building to 40 independent living units and possibly adding additional independent living buildings. The need for senior living is going to grow, and Westminster is replying, Nathan said. Returning to the first page from Bloomington, the city should spend about $500,000 a year for the next 10 years to preserve the few remaining brick streets, according to a recommendation made Thursday by the Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission. The commission voted unanimously to endorse a draft revision of the city's 2009 Brick Streets Master Plan, which will go to the Planning Commission September 27th and possibly to the City Council in October. This is not a comprehensive Brick Streets Master Plan, said Bloomington Public Works Director Jim Karch. It is a beginning piece and it does give us a very good baseline. Based on the projected costs and assuming full funding each year, the plan proposes reconstructing a total of 10 blocks of brick streets and patching 20 more over the 10 years, beginning with the streets in the worst condition. The city staff initial recommendation was to give priority to preserving brick streets in the city's historic districts, but Commission Vice Chairman Lee Klein opposed that. The compromise struck Thursday calls for using a weighted evaluation system. That would give more consideration to the condition of the street than whether the street is in a historic district. Klein said she is pleased with that. There are areas of the city that are historic, but they don't yet have the official designation of a historic district. A brick street could be a big factor in giving them that designation, and we don't want to take that away from any neighborhood because the street was not preserved. So they now have added historic district and potential historic district as part of the formula, and that makes me happy, she added. As part of the compromise, the city proposes holding off on patching brick streets with concrete or asphalt and no longer requiring 80% of adjacent homeowners to sign off on preserving a brick street as a brick street, said Karch. The city, which has about 320 miles of streets, once had 41 miles of brick streets, but now only 3.5 miles remain. Some brick streets have been lost since the 2009 plan was developed, but never adopted. The revised plan is an old, big improvement from the 2009 plan, which was skewed much more toward wealthier neighborhoods, and in fact, streets in modest neighborhoods like ours were very far down on the list, said Bloomington resident Julian Westerhout, who is an Illinois State University Instructional Assistant Professor and Vice President of the Bloomington Public Library Board. He lives on a 100-year-old brick street, Monroe Street, between Clinton and Robinson Streets, that was scheduled for resurfacing with asphalt. Residents later asked in April to have it repaired as a brick street after Alderman Amelia Baragas canvassed residents and made them aware of that option. It was that local reaction that brought the 2009 master plan back to the attention of the council, which then instructed the public works staff to work with the Historic Preservation Commission to come up with a strategy to update and implement the Brick Streets Master Plan. As the plan stands now, the top priority is really the streets that are in the worst condition, said Westerhout. It shouldn't be where the fanciest houses are necessarily. The cost to restore and repair brick streets is significantly more than a typical street, but brick streets can last up to 100 to 150 years compared to the lifespan of an asphalt street at 30 years, Karch noted. Continuing on page A2, in the State Watch column, Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner has asked federal responders to join state officials in assessing the damage in four counties after flooding last month. Rauner's office said Thursday that workers from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Illinois Emergency Management Agency, and other groups are expected to start damage assessment on home and businesses Friday morning. The assessments will be done in Cook, Kane, Lake, and McHenry counties. They will continue through the weekend until they're complete. The request was made after the county officials documented nearly 300 homes suffered major damage or were destroyed, and more than 3,000 others also were affected by floodwaters. The assessments will help determine if the state meets the federal threshold of $18.3 million needed to qualify for assistance. And today in history, on August 18, 1587, Virginia Dare became the first child of English parents to be born in present-day America on what is now Roanoke Island in North Carolina. However, the Roanoke colony ended up mysteriously disappearing. We're going on now to page A3 for more local news. Drury touts fiscal fixes for Illinois. The governor candidate is addressing pension reform and debt. Scott Drury likes some of his opponent's ideas for big fixes for Illinois, but the Democratic candidate for governor thinks the state needs to get its house in order first. Health care is a right, but to get there you have to be able to fund it. A lot of my counterparts just want to ignore that fact and say, we're going to get from A to B without saying how, said Drury, a state representative from Highwood. Then we won't deliver on it, and voters lose faith in the Democratic Party. I think that needs to stop. Drury hopes voters will choose him from among a crowded field of Democrats vying to challenge Republican Governor Bruce Rauner in 2018 because he has more realistic goals and two important qualities, experience and trustworthy. I've been in state government for 5 years. I have a good sense of how it works and what doesn't work, said Drury during a campaign stop Wednesday night in Bloomington. What the public wants is someone who's going to do what they're saying. I'm happy to compare my record with anyone else's. Drury's resume includes working as a federal prosecutor and serving in the Illinois House, where this spring he became the first member in 30 years not to vote for Michael Madigan as a speaker. He insists that it wasn't for publicity, however. That's where my district is at. It shouldn't be that shocking, Drury said of the vote. His district, the 58th, is on Lake Michigan north of Chicago. The General Assembly doesn't believe it can vote as it wants to, he said. It doesn't represent its constituents, and that's very problematic because you get two people running the state, and when they don't get along, you have 2.5 years of no budget while everybody around us is suffering. Drury's platform includes first addressing pension reform, which he referred to as a third rail in the state government. Drury said paying that debt, which was not done in the latest state budget despite a large tax increase, is critical to fixing the state's finances, including a $15 billion bill backlog. We've buried ourselves through fiscal mismanagement, and it was a bipartisan effort, he said. If we don't take care of our debt, we're always going to be lacking in public education, investing in our health care system, job training programs all over the state, and investing in our neighborhoods. Drury also supports term limits for legislators as a way to prevent them from accumulating power, as Madigan has. Stricter campaign finance rules to prevent billionaires like Rauner from buying off legislators and independent maps to make state legislative districts more fair. He also proposes putting more money into Medicaid and giving more tax credits to low-income families as a step toward single-payer health care and backs a progressive income tax structure which could not be implemented until 2021. We all know in politics that's a lifetime, he said. Do we think we don't need to fix anything now? Continuing on page A3, Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White announced Thursday that he'll seek a sixth term, reversing earlier declarations that he would step down after 2 decades in an office that was tainted by corruption prior to his arrival. "I'm your man," the 83-year-old Democrat told a crowd of 1,800 attending a brunch in Springfield hosted by the Democratic County Chairman's Association. He said that while the office is a far better place now than it was when he took over, there's more work for him to do in improving road conditions, customer service, and teen driving programs. White, widely known for the Jesse White Tumblers, a program he started in 1959 to provide an alternative to gangs and drugs for inner-city young people, was first elected Secretary of State in 1998. He replaced Republican George Ryan, who was elected governor, but later went to federal prison for political corruption, mostly tied to his 2 terms as Secretary of State. The Illinois Republican Party released a statement mocking White for saying in 2009 that his fourth term would be his last, and again as late as last year saying he'd call it quits. No Republican has announced a candidacy for the office. White has proven a prodigious vote-getter. The former state representative and county recorder of deeds has won 5 races for Secretary of State by an average plurality of 1.1 million votes, according to an Associated Press compilation, an analysis of State Board of Election figures. His winning percentages of 70% in 2010 and 69% in 2002 are the 4th and 5th largest of any statewide race since 1900, according to the analysis. The brunch has traditionally preceded an old-fashioned school campaign rally at the state fair, which Democrats skipped this year, but 9 candidates for governor took to the rostrum, with many unloading as much firepower on Republican President Donald Trump as on the man they hope to replace, GOP Governor Bruce Rauner. Several candidates castigated Trump for softening his statements on the Charlottesville, Virginia incident Saturday. "We must always take sides," said Chicago businessman J.B. Pritzker, quoting Holocaust survivor Eli Wiesel. "As we begin the fight, the resistance, we Democrats must remember, we are all on one side, the same side, the American side." And the final article on page A3 is headlined, "Whalen Files Innocence Petition." A state crime lab scientist's opinion that Don Whalen's palm print was found on a pool cue used to beat his father during a brutal bar fight is demonstrably false and should not be considered as evidence that Whalen is a murderer, according to a petition for a new trial filed Thursday by Whalen's lawyers. The 50-page petition claims newly discovered evidence, including documents never introduced at Don Whalen's 1991 murder trial in the death of William Whalen, show that Don Whalen is innocent. Don Whalen, now 50, is serving a 60-year sentence. New evidence related to the palm print, combined with an affidavit from a witness who has changed his testimony, and DNA results that show no link between Whalen and the crime scene, should be more than sufficient to support a new trial, said defense lawyer Elliot Slosser. "I was 6 years old when Bill was killed. To think Don has been in prison since I was a child is shocking in light of the evidence used to convince him," said Slosser. Colleen Whalen accompanied Slosser to the McLean County Law and Justice Center in Bloomington to file documents she hopes will exonerate her son. "I could never imagine Donnie ever hurting his dad. I didn't know who did it nor why, and I still don't know," she said. After the filing, State's Attorney Jason Chambers said the post-conviction process is a very deliberate one. "We respect the verdicts of juries, both guilty and not guilty, and we do not automatically cast aside a conviction of 12 McLean County jurors." If there is clear evidence that the situation should be changed, then the court will take the appropriate steps. The importance of the palm print cannot be overstated, according to the petition filed by Slosser with the University of Chicago's Exoneration Project. The opinion of Illinois State Police Lab scientist John Durker that the bloody print on the broken pool cue matched Don Whalen was crucial to the state's case. The jury was told this palm print was everything, said Slosser. Documents given to Whalen's former defense lawyer by the state in 2007 and recently rediscovered by Slosser indicate that Durker called former Bloomington police detective Randy McKinley on April 30, 1991, and told him the palm print was inconclusive. In other words, according to Mr. Durker, the partial palm print on the broken pool cue could have matched the victim or was unsuitable for comparison, said the petition. Such a statement debunks the examiner's opinion 2 weeks later that the print could not have been made by anybody except Don Whalen, according to Slosser. The defense has asked for access to all fingerprint evidence. The petition outlines potential new evidence on the cash Don Whalen allegedly had on the day after his father's funeral. Admitted drug dealer William Elliott testified in 91 that he and Don Whalen purchased more than $3,000 in cocaine in Chicago the day after William Whalen's funeral. In a newly obtained affidavit, Elliott revealed that he was mistaken at trial regarding the amount of money paid by Mr. Whalen for the drugs, and Whalen didn't have as much money on him as he led me to believe. Elliott also told the defense that Bloomington police knew when they questioned him in 91 that the money Whalen took to Chicago came from funeral donations collected by the family. The disclosure disproves the state motive that Whalen killed his father for drug money, said Slosser. Whalen maintains he was asleep in his apartment April 6, 1991, when his father was beaten and stabbed sometime after 2 a.m. at the 20 Grand Tap, a downtown Bloomington bar owned by the elder Whalen. Two roommates told police Don Whalen was still home at 1 a.m. and in bed at 6:30 a.m. when he was awakened and told about the incident at the bar. Prosecutors claim that Don Whalen could have left home, killed his father, and slipped back home undetected by his roommates. The DNA test results on knives collected at the bar that excluded Don Whalen as a contributor also point to his innocence, according to the petition. The testing was completed after a 10-year court battle. A hearing date has not been set on the new petition. On page 5 is a public safety item. There was a burglary. Two 18-year-old Bloomington men were jailed Thursday after police arrested them early Wednesday in the area of Country Club Place in connection with residential burglary. Police say they were called to the area at 1:26 a.m. Wednesday for a report of suspicious person. Police said two males carrying backpacks were seen walking between houses. The suspects ran when police arrived, but were taken into custody, police said. Several items that had been reported as stolen in the area were recovered. The two are expected in court Friday. The Pantograph does not name the suspects until they are formally charged. We'll move to page A5 and read some of the opinions on the editorial page. Cheers to the churches involved in last week's neighborhood block party held at First Christian Church in downtown Bloomington. A group of Twin City churches work on the event that provides free health screening, school supplies, games, and lunch to several thousand attendees. Although the event is held but once a year, a church member pointed out that help is available through the churches year-round. We thank the churches, their members, and party volunteers for making families feel so welcome. And a thank you to Rich Buchanan, a longtime member of the McLean County Board and former Bloomington Mayor, for his many years of public and community service. Buchanan, 78, has resigned his board seat for health reasons, and McLean County will sorely miss his insight, wisdom, and hard work. We thank him for his selfless dedication and wish him well. And a reminder to avert your eyes, at least directly, from the sun on Monday, when a solar eclipse will naturally draw our eyes upward when the moon passes between the earth and sun. There are many ways to see a solar eclipse without staring at the planetary bodies, a sure way to damage your eyes. Enjoy the event, but carefully. And hot diggity, hot diggity dog diggity, Portillo's is finally open. Cheers to Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home for its upcoming inaugural Calvert Cares Community Food Drive. The drive will be 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. September 6th at the Interstate Center in Bloomington as part of the Memorial Home's annual Senior Expo. Donors to the drive will receive a coupon for free donuts. The food donation will benefit Midwest Food Bank and McLean County Food Pantries. And condolences to the family and friends of Gene Smedley, a former managing area of the Pantograph. Mr. Smedley, 96, died last week. His most recent contributions to this newspaper were columns about the people and events of days yore, but his imprint remains to this day. And from the How Time Flies section and the opinion page, 100 years ago on August 18, 1917, auto racing was on at the Leroy Fair. Wild Bill Endicott of Indianapolis was driving his Sweeney Special. Endicott was recognized as America's greatest dirt track driver. The races attracted other drivers from around the country, plus England's champion. And on August 18, 1942, 75 years ago, the First Baptist Church in Fairbury made an estimated 1,550-pound donation to a wartime scrap drive. The old church bell, which had been half-buried and used as a flower basin, was dug up and added to the drive. And 50 years ago, on August 18, 1967, Bill Peterson, one of Bloomington's prominent musicians, died. He headed the musicians' union here since 1925. He played drums and trombone in the Bloomington Municipal Band. On that Sunday night, a concert was dedicated. And the final item, 25 years ago on August 18, 1992, authorities made a fourth arrest in the S&S Liquor murders, in which three people were killed in 1988. Harold Wilson, half-brother of two other defendants, was arrested at a motel in Ohio. He was accused of providing the murder weapons and driving the getaway car. This has been Carol Perhatch reading the Pantograph for Friday, August 18th, 2017. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you again next time. And thank you for listening to me.